Welcome to the therapy series, Overcoming Panic and Anxiety. This series specifically targets panic and anxiety. It will teach you how to eliminate panic by learning to control your body, brain, and emotions. This may seem impossible right now, but I will explain it all to you, thoroughly and in detail, and show you how you can learn to control your thoughts and your emotions, thereby stopping panic attacks and the anxiety that makes life so miserable. I will also explain what we must do and why to overcome panic and anxiety. This means more than listening to these therapy sessions. If we want to overcome panic, we must do more than just understand how to get better. We need to take what we've learned and use it, or put it into practice. In the United States alone, close to 3% of the population meets the clinical definition for panic, and it is generally agreed that these numbers are relatively consistent with other countries who maintain scientific data. More women than men report having panic disorder, but it's believed that the number of men with panic disorder is underreported. This is a high proportion of the population that has either chosen to live with this horrible disorder or to take pills to blunt its effects, neither of which is a very satisfying choice. As we begin, let's talk about the definition and symptoms of panic disorder, and let's be clear about what a panic attack is. The first step in solving a problem is to define our terms clearly. What is a panic attack? A panic attack can only be described as a comprehensive emotional nightmare. A person suffering from panic attacks recently wrote to me, "I was 16 years old when I had my first panic attack in high school. Why me?" I used to ask. "What's wrong with me? What did I do wrong?" I went from an outspoken extrovert to becoming very inward. It was a crippling blow to my self-esteem. Mostly, I felt hopeless. Some people who have anxiety and panic attacks feel like they are in an escalating cycle of catastrophe and doom, and that something bad is going to happen to them immediately, right now, this very minute. Others feel as if they're having a heart attack, as their heart races out of control, and they feel their heart beating faster every second. The fear is so strong, it is hard to focus on anything else. The heart palpitations convince them that they're about to have an imminent heart attack. Another person wrote, "Soon after my first panic attacks, I focused on my heart pounding because I felt it so intensely during attacks. My heart will just take off during an attack. After that, I feel a sensation of prickling throughout my arms and legs, followed by a rush of blood flow to my heart. This happens over about 15 to 20 seconds. Other sensations include sweating. My hands will sweat and blood rushes to my face. I also feel physically weak. If I talk, my voice will not be normal. It goes up and down, depending upon how scared I am." Other people feel that they are going to lose control of themselves and something bad will happen that will be embarrassing to them in front of other people. "Panic has affected me in many public situations," said Dan. "I'm deathly afraid of being in the spotlight. It's not just regular performance anxiety. It's that I could physically lose control. This has happened on dates when I felt a panic attack coming on. Others breathe quickly and shallowly, gasping for air, feeling they are about to suffocate. I can almost feel the instant I lose control, wrote Sarah. There is such a quick onset of the adrenaline and my heart racing that has led me to feel hopeless at times. It can dial up within 10 seconds, and bam, a rush of this flood goes to my brain, and I'm left hyperventilating. It is no surprise that the intense physical sensations and confusion brought on by panic attacks can lead to a cycle of fear and devastation in our lives. John said, "It was only after I had several major life stressors that I had a panic attack so bad that it knocked my life off the rails. I was shaking. I had almost made it to work that day, but this panic attack changed my life so drastically that I was left wondering what had happened and how do I get back to feeling normal. I went into work and hoped I would come back to my normal self, but I just felt scared and depressed and hopeless, like my world was coming down all around me. And I would never be the same again, and I didn't know why. I went to the sandwich shop for lunch and hoped I'd feel normal, but it never happened. And at the shop, I thought I'd have another panic attack. Day after day, I hoped I'd feel better, but that weekend, I just felt down and had more panic attacks. I noticed ringing in my ears during my second panic attack when I was at home alone. I was laying on my couch watching TV when I felt some negative feelings start stirring. I then heard a ringing in my ears, and this made me focus more internally on my fears. It scared me that I was going to have another panic attack. I hadn't been scared about my previous attack in the same way, but now panic made me scared because I thought it meant I was going to have another attack, lose control, and die. It was a challenge just making it through every day at work with a head full of twisted anxiety. Let's look at some of the common symptoms of panic. A racing or pounding heartbeat. Dizziness and lightheadedness. A feeling that I can't catch my breath. Chest pains or a heaviness in the chest. Bodily flushes or chills. Tingling in the hands, feet, legs, and arms. Jumpiness, trembling, twitching muscles, sweaty palms, flushed face, a feeling of terror, a fear of losing control, fear of a stroke that will lead to disability, a fear of dying, a fear of going crazy, an inability to sleep, because of thinking about all these horrors. Nightmares that focus on fears associated with panic. Worry and frustration about having another panic attack. A panic attack typically lasts several long minutes and is one of the most distressing conditions a person can experience. In some cases, panic attacks have been known to last for longer periods of time, or to recur very quickly over and over again. The aftermath of a panic attack is very painful. Feelings of depression and helplessness are usually experienced. The greatest fear is that the panic attack will come back again, tearing the individual down even further and making life too miserable to bear. In many places, specific therapy for panic and the phobias that accompany it is not readily available. And if it is, it carries a financial and time-related cost to the patient. In a perfect world, it would be best for people experiencing their first panic episode to get professional treatment for it immediately, so that panic, anxiety, and any phobias could be prevented altogether. Of course, we don't live in a perfect world, and people who experience these problems either need to find a comprehensive therapy source where they live, with a psychologist who specializes in anxiety disorders, or follow the therapy as outlined in this series, Overcoming Panic and Anxiety. Also contributing to panic attacks and anxiety are some common phobias that children and adults develop. Most common is agoraphobia, which occurs when a person becomes so afraid of having panic attacks in varied outside places that they want to stay home, where they will be triggered less by anxiety and have fewer and fewer panic attacks. Agoraphobia occurs when panic attacks are suffered in so many different places, such as driving on the freeway, going into a warehouse store, walking near a crowded road, or entering a crowded atmosphere. The main problem is the occurrence of panic attacks in many varied places that makes the person anxious and fearful of having another panic attack in similar places. When all the world looks scary, a person tends to stay at home, many times becoming housebound because of the fear of having a panic attack in public, outside the home. There are many other phobias, including emetophobia, the fear of vomiting in public places, and aerophobia, the fear of flying in airplanes, that contribute to anxiety and make people afraid of having a panic attack. All panic-related phobias are similar in that they serve as anxiety triggers, and the fear is strong enough to lead to panic attacks. Panic is not necessarily brought on by a recognizable circumstance, and the why may remain a mystery to the person involved. These attacks may come from out of the blue. At other times, excessive stress or other negative life conditions can trigger an attack. Returning to the place where a panic attack previously occurred can trigger a new attack. Claustrophobic conditions, where you feel trapped in an enclosed space and can't get enough air to breathe, can bring on panic attacks. Sadly, most people do not seek help for panic attacks, agoraphobia, and anxiety-related difficulties. This is especially tragic because panic and anxiety are treatable conditions that respond well to the therapy we're doing in this series. The National Institutes of Mental Health and the American Psychological Association both officially state that panic is one of the most successfully treated psychological problems in the world today. Clinical research provides us with a solid blueprint of methods that can help us overcome anxiety and panic conditions. Let me introduce myself to you. I am Dr. Thomas A. Richards, a psychologist who has specialized in treating anxiety disorders since 1994. Many of you know us from our internet sites, the Anxiety Network and the Social Anxiety Institute, as well as our books and writings on the subject of anxiety. You may know that I suffered with anxiety myself until I was about 40 years old, back in the days when there was no definition or adequate therapy for anxiety disorders. I suffered the most in the 1970s, before the internet existed, when there was no form of help available anywhere. After receiving my college degree, I taught high school for 9 years in California and Arizona, and then went to graduate school in the 1980s to earn my master's and doctoral degrees in psychology. After that, I taught at several universities throughout the country and finally opened a private psychological practice in Phoenix. This quickly turned into an anxiety clinic because of my interest in people with problems like mine. I narrowed the scope of my practice to panic and social anxiety as the century came to a close. I understood what my social anxiety patients were saying immediately, since I had suffered from the identical problem for decades, and it amazed me that there were so many other people out there like me that lived harrowing lives filled with anxiety. But my social anxiety patients were only 25% of my practice. The majority of it consisted of people with panic. Right away, I felt a kinship with people who suffered from panic, because anxiety is still the cause of the problem. Additionally, I learned some new, specific things that do not exactly correspond between the two anxiety disorders. I remember talking to one of my patients as he described his feeling of losing control before, during, and after a panic attack. At first, his terminology was difficult for me to grasp, until his explanation fleshed it out. We were facing each other, sitting on the comfortable couches in my main therapy room, and I remember the anguish in his voice as he told me he feared he would completely lose it. He would freak out. He wasn't sure what would happen, but he might not be able to contain it any longer. Sometimes he felt like a pressure cooker that was about to explode. I identified with what he was saying because it was anxiety that caused these problems, and it was anxiety that plagued my patients. I can remember the very first patient I had with panic, a man who was coming into therapy after having a panic attack that shook him to the very core. In the past, he had suffered through violent panic attacks, but had sought treatment for them that was seemingly successful. He thought he was permanently free from attacks. In fact, he went for 20 years without another hint of an attack. But somehow, something had triggered his anxiety. Panic had snuck back up on him, and because panic has the ability to come back if not cut off completely in therapy, he had unexpectedly been shattered by a panic attack one afternoon. The very next morning, he was in my office, his hands still shaking from the attack the day before. Through his questions and explanations, I explained to him that we had to get the cognitive solutions, we call them strategies, more thoroughly embedded into his brain so that panic could never occur again. Something we will make sure to do for you in this series. In his previous therapy, he had not been presented with much cognitive work at all. But this man was very determined. worked diligently, and learned the cognitive strategies backwards and forwards. "I look forward to coming here every week," he told me one day when we were about halfway through the program. "I get to talk about my progress. We're focused on getting better, and you always give me more rational strategies to learn and work on." This was great, I thought, because feeling positive about therapy makes it easier to make further progress, and that made me happy. I learned something new from each one of my patients, for panic is never expressed in the same way in every individual. And that was eye-opening, educational, and exciting for me as I continued to see better and more effective ways of helping my patients each day. The therapy we will use in this series is called cognitive behavioral therapy, and it will help us slow down, reduce, and eliminate our panic attacks. Perhaps it's best to call this peaceful and calm cognitive behavioral therapy, along with the use of mindfulness. Many people get mixed up in their attempts to find a cure for panic because there's a new miracle cure being peddled every week on the internet. But I'm a doctoral psychologist and adhere to the strictest guidelines in understanding and using legitimate research to help people get better. This means we must be ethical and stick to provable scientific research that has data behind it. Therefore, we will go with the scientific evidence, that which we know works and has the evidence behind it to support its use. Panic has been studied scientifically for 50 years now, and we know the best and most effective strategies to use to help people overcome it. We know what works and what doesn't. These preliminary studies were done years ago, and later studies added the details of how to make therapy better and more long-lasting, all of which we will incorporate into this series. All the strategies we are going to use have been shown by scientific research to be effective in reducing panic and the anxiety it brings on. When you use the strategies we'll cover in this series, the neural pathways in your brain that currently lead to panic will be overwritten with the rational, true, therapeutic information you'll be learning. I've worked with hundreds of people who had panic and anxiety during the past 25 years. These people came from all types of backgrounds, many of them traveling thousands of miles to see me in my office in Phoenix. But they all shared one thing in common. Every one of them who stuck with the therapy got better. They learned to reduce and then eliminate their panic attacks over time because they didn't give up. When they persevered with peaceful, rational therapy, they literally changed the neural pathways in their brain and the associations or connections their brain's neural pathways made, meaning they were able to permanently prevent panic from ever happening again. By using peaceful, rational, cognitive therapy methods, I have seen hundreds of people overcome panic disorder and seal it off forever so that it does not recur again. That's what my patients wanted, and thankfully, because the brain is malleable and responds to rational proof, panic can be overcome. That is the goal and purpose of this series, calm and peaceful cognitive behavioral therapy has been shown to be both successful and practical for solving anxiety and panic problems. Instead of using old-fashioned Freudian analysis-based techniques or partially useful but incomplete fad therapies, therapists employing peaceful cognitive methods focus on the panic itself and how to peacefully, carefully, and calmly shrink it down to size. The focus is on how to eliminate the thoughts and feelings that lead to the vicious recycling of panic and anxiety. In recent years, as awareness of panic has grown, doctors have begun mass prescribing antidepressants for panic disorder. These medications are antidepressants and were originally intended for people with depressive illnesses, and they have been relatively successful in helping people with many types of depression feel better. Their effectiveness for anxiety disorders, however, has been much less successful. While some of these antidepressant drugs, when used at high dosages, can stop panic attacks, the side effects of these drugs are typically harsh and negative. It should also be noted that these drugs do not cure panic attacks or anxiety. They only mask panic by causing other problems. This is called its side effect profile. But as soon as you stop taking the drug, the anxiety and panic come back again. Why? Because drugs do not change the brain's neural pathways or the way brain cells communicate with each other, and they do not change the brain's chemistry permanently. The reason they sometimes work is because they change the brain's chemistry temporarily for several hours. But if the next pill is not taken as scheduled, then you can expect withdrawal effects to set in, and the brain chemistry gradually and painfully returns to its default mode. A permanent solution to panic disorder is available through peaceful cognitive behavioral therapy. So follow through with this series and make sure you overcome panic permanently. Some people with panic may not be aware they are thinking anything before, during, or after an attack, because their emotions feel so strong and overwhelming. But cognitive therapy teaches us to become more aware of what we're thinking and helps us change negative, irrational thoughts into thoughts that are rational. Being able to think logically and rationally, and then act in a new and different way in responding to panic attacks, is a big part of the solution in stopping our panic attacks. We want to provide you with the same exact therapy you would receive if you were with me in my office at the Anxiety Clinic. If you follow the directions in this series and take it gently and slowly, you will find you are thinking more logically and rationally. You will also observe that you do have control over your own emotions. As you begin to realize this, you will be putting the therapy into place. And when you fully realize these things, you'll have the power to change your life and prevent panic attacks from happening. The advantage of a series like this is that you can go back over anything you want. You are not limited to what was said in a typical psychological session. So we will be making use of our extra time to make sure we're on the right track in overcoming panic, and we'll use proven cognitive behavioral methods to help us get there. You've probably heard about the fight or flight response. It's important we understand this physiological response, common to all animals. So let's make it very clear. What does the fight or flight response mean? A panic attack is a terrifying experience. It's hard to explain the depths of fear people go through during a panic attack, and it's hard to put it into words. But it is not, in any sense, dangerous. You feel threatened when a panic attack occurs, but there is no rational danger involved. Nothing in your environment is going to kill you, hurt you, maim you, or paralyze you. You are having a panic attack based on an irrational sequence of worry or fear. Panic is a natural bodily reaction that occurs when it really doesn't need to occur. All animals respond with a fight or flight response when they feel threatened in some way. In the 21st century, we no longer have these physical threats in our environment to deal with on an everyday basis. That is, we no longer face the environmental dangers to our existence we would have faced 5,000 years ago. When we feel a panic attack coming on, here's what's happening in our body. A sudden surge of the hormones, adrenaline and cortisol, flows through our body. It's been triggered because we feel threatened about something. And this strong surge, or jolt of fear, produces the built-in fight or flight response. We've been confronted with something painful, so we either want to fight it, battle it, or conquer it. Or we want to run away from it. And when we can't avoid the attack, and when we can't fight it off either, the loss of control we feel causes us to panic even further, which makes anxiety spiral out of control. We feel helpless. No matter what we do, our fate is sealed, and a terrifying panic attack is coming on. An attack that will leave us emotionally drained and fatigued. It is the rush of excessive amounts of adrenaline and cortisol in the bloodstream that causes us to feel panic. However, notice that if you really were in danger, the strong urge to run away from or to fight the enemy would ensure your survival. But in the 21st century, panic occurs when it doesn't really need to occur. There is no physical danger present when you have a panic attack. You don't really need to fight anyone or run away from anyone to ensure your survival. The fight or flight response is rarely needed today as a means for your continued existence. It is a remnant of our evolutionary past that pops up to confuse us and make our life as miserable as it can. Looked at under the microscope of cold, hard reality, the fight-or-flight response is not rational for us today unless we are truly facing imminent physical danger. The excessive amount of adrenaline and cortisol involved in a panic attack increases blood flow and blood pressure and increases your physical strength to prepare you for the battle you think is coming. Your mind becomes very aware of any perceived danger. You become hyper alert to everything that is going on around you and can easily take a minor symptom and blow it up into something that seems dangerous. This extra hyper-awareness of perceived dangers alerts you that whatever you're worrying about, heartbeat, stomach ache, ringing in your ears, inability to swallow, is worse than you thought. Maybe now you notice new symptoms that will start months of nightmares. You're already attuned to noticing physical symptoms, and this rise in blood flow and blood pressure makes you even more aware of other additional symptoms and problems. Anxiety makes you hypervigilant, and you put additional attention on your physical symptoms, such as heartbeat, shaking, trembling, stomach aches, dizziness, confusion, fear of losing control, or going crazy. And these symptoms make you more fearful. You feel more afraid by the second. Anxiety makes your symptoms seem worse than they are, which causes more fear and anxiety. And this leads you to pay added attention to your internal symptoms. Anxiety leads to fear, fear leads to panic, and panic leads to a heightened awareness of symptoms. It's a recurring feedback loop, and one that seems impossible to escape from when you're in it, without the appropriate knowledge and therapeutic help. During a panic attack, your body goes through the same physical processes as it would if you were in real danger. The difference, of course, is that although you experience all the horrible feelings as if you are in mortal danger, you really are not. Because you experience panic attacks without knowing why, it only makes the situation worse, and it becomes more confusing and frightening to you. Because of these feelings of panic, it's very common to attribute danger to the bodily symptoms you're experiencing. So if you feel a symptom is bothersome, you'll tend to worry about it more. Thus, if your heart speeds up a little bit and you hear it beating, it can actually become scary and bring on a panic attack because you're paying an excessive amount of attention to the symptom. I've had patients worry excessively about imminent heart attacks, and countless of them went to the hospital emergency room and were put on heart monitors because they were convinced they were having the impending physical symptoms of a heart attack. At the hospital or medical doctor's offices, my patients were wired up to heart monitors that they wore for several days. But each time the medical results demonstrated that their hearts were perfectly normal and healthy. Nothing was wrong with them. They had been so sure it was something physical. But when their medical doctor showed them that their heart was healthy and robust, they came back into therapy more motivated than ever to overcome panic and anxiety. I do recommend that every patient who is fearful and convinced they are suffering from a physical condition, like a heart attack, be checked out by a physician before continuing therapy, just to be on the safe side. It is important the person knows for certain they are suffering from anxiety and not from a physical medical condition. A medical problem concerning a patient's body always needs to be ruled out first. We need to know for certain we are dealing with anxiety. If you firmly believe that you're suffering from a physical condition, consult a physician. If the results of your checkup show that you are not suffering from a physical medical condition, realize it's anxiety that causes the problem, and the course of action we need to take is to learn how to cut off and stop our panic attacks. I've had other patients worry about what was happening with them and the confusion they felt during an attack. These people feared they were going crazy. By this, they meant that their thoughts were so muddled and confused, and their fear about this was so great that they didn't think they could function. They couldn't understand what was going on. Things were out of control. Everything was moving too fast, and all of this unwanted activity overwhelmed them. Everything seemed to be happening all at once, and the sped-up fear caused by adrenaline and cortisol made it impossible to take any action. Too many jumbled thoughts that don't make sense can lead people to think there's something wrong with them, when the culprit is really adrenaline and cortisol speeding up every process in the brain. This illustrates how devastating the symptoms of panic can be, because no one goes crazy because they have panic attacks. Crazy is not the right word to use anyway, but it is the word that patients frequently use. Clinically, we would say psychotic instead of crazy. But people with panic never become psychotic. Why? Because people with panic pay too much attention to reality, to how they are thinking and feeling. They constantly worry about their physical symptoms. People who have a psychosis are the opposite. They show no self-awareness and do not worry about their symptoms. In addition, they aren't even concerned about having them. Other patients fear that I'm going to pass out and die. It's dizziness or lightheadedness that leads people to feel this way. This is not really possible because during a panic attack, blood pressure begins to rise. It rises because the excessive amounts of adrenaline and cortisol are being pumped into the bloodstream. As your blood pressure rises, your body has more energy and you become more aware and alert. Because blood pressure rises, and this is something that can be measured, you cannot lose consciousness. Total consciousness, or die. Notice that even if you could go unconscious, your breathing, which is under control of your autonomic nervous system, would cause you to immediately start breathing again. Many people with panic fear that they're losing control. This is usually a fear of not being able to control the future or future outcomes. Just like everyone else, the person with panic wants to be in control of their own life. What panic and anxiety do best is to take away control from the individual. By having a panic attack, it indicates I am not in control. After all, a panic attack is the last thing I wanted to have. It's a horrible experience. Just thinking about it emphasizes my lack of being in control. Because I am not in control, I feel helpless and hopeless. This is like driving a car and you turn the steering wheel to go right, and instead the car turns left. This is totally unexpected. It is confusing and disorienting. It proves to you that something is wrong, that you are not in control. This is one of the worst fears people with panic face. They fear they are losing control, that they have no control over future outcomes, no matter what they do. Take a step back and look at the bigger picture. The fact that you are aware and worried about losing control of your life guarantees that this cannot really occur. The only people who lose control are people who are not thinking about losing control, not worried about it, or not even aware of losing control in any way. These people have other, more worrisome psychological problems. You do not. Although the thoughts and feelings of anxiety and panic are all too real, the brain is being tricked into thinking that it is in danger, when actually it is not. We will be surprised when we realize that our brain is being tricked by anxiety. And when we realize this, we can begin to change the way we think, which includes our ingrained thought patterns and beliefs. Simply understanding what's wrong with us will not help us overcome our panic and anxiety. We need to be committed to learning new rational strategies to get better. The strategy of calm and peaceful cognitive behavioral therapy has been shown by research to be the most effective way to deal with anxiety problems. There is no reason to rehash the past and analyze it to death as Freudian psychoanalysts would have us believe. Research has demonstrated the more you overthink and overanalyze your life, the worse you make your problems. It is said that analysis equals paralysis. So instead of going back and analyzing your past over and over again and coming to no adequate conclusion, it's better to focus on making the present better so that the future becomes free of panic and anxiety. As you continue to think and feel more rationally, that is in tune with reality, in tune with the truth, you will come to rational conclusions about your past experiences in life. You never need to dwell on the past and analyze it to death. Just keep allowing yourself to think and feel rationally instead of allowing emotional reasoning to flood your brain. This is the most effective and permanent course of action to take. No other therapy has as rich of a research base as cognitive behavioral therapy, or has produced as many reliable, peer-reviewed research articles published in the leading academic journals. There is a reason for this, and that is because CBT, when done in the manner explained, literally changes your brain. This can now be seen through the use of brain imaging scans, like MRIs. Your brain makes literal changes after undergoing cognitive behavioral treatment for anxiety that can be seen by the naked eye when magnified millions and millions of times. We'll also work on changing the way our thoughts are associated with other thoughts. Usually, we refer to this as rational thinking. But the result of changing your thoughts is a literal change in the brain's neural pathway associations. Every strategy employed will directly relate to overcoming panic and anxiety. There are no fillers or added material that does not relate to getting over panic and the anxiety that surrounds it. In CBT for Anxiety, we will learn not to fight or resist our anxiety. If this sounds strange or wrong to you, you'll see why this is true in the very next session, when we get to the heart of the solution to panic. Instead, we'll learn to relax accept, and go through anxiety situations gently in a peaceful way. With our thoughts and beliefs, we will always stay logical and rational, and reinforce everything from a logical, rational perspective. If you read and reread your therapy handouts thoroughly so they become second nature to you, your brain will begin to operate automatically, and it will respond to irrational anxiety and panic by rejecting it. We are going to learn that thinking rationally and acting rationally helps us stop having panic attacks. When we act on what we know to be rational and true, we can stop anxiety and panic. Effective therapy is putting into action the cognitive strategies we learn. Only direct, systematic, targeted action of something that we learn to do literally changes the brain and helps us overcome panic and anxiety. Once you've stopped your panic attacks, it is very important you continue on and stop all irrational anxiety, because panic and anxiety can come back if you do not make the new habits you've learned permanent. When panic returns, it's called recycling. Our goal is to make the new habits and beliefs that you learn in the upcoming sessions permanent, so that recycling cannot occur. An unfortunate feature of panic disorder is called symptom shifting. The good news is that symptom shifting does not occur until you've made progress in stopping your panic attacks. Because symptom shifting is a feature of overcoming panic, we'll talk about this entire subject at greater length in a future session in this series. Now let's look at how panic affects the brain. Please look at the handout in your book or in your session materials called The Brain. It is a very simple cross-section of the human brain. Notice that the top part, or gray part, called the cerebrum, is where our brain processes information, our thinking, planning, remembering, and perceiving. We can also call this the cognitive brain. This is where the new strategies, methods, and concepts we learn will be processed, so that our brain gradually changes and our new habits, all of which will reduce and eliminate anxiety, become automatic and permanent. The middle part of the brain, in white, is the mid-region part of the brain. This is where the limbic system is located. This mid-region area is directly in the center of your brain and sits close to the top of the brainstem, or your spinal column. This region of the brain processes our emotions and is also known as the emotional brain. This part of our brain controls all of our emotions. The negative ones, such as anxiety, fear, depression, irritation, frustration, and anger, and also the positive emotions, such as peace, happiness, humor, enjoyment, contentment, and calmness. Notice that if we emphasize our positive emotions, there is an inverse reaction. Our negative emotions will be reduced. We know that the more strategies we can use to reduce anxiety, to take the pressure off ourselves, and to think more clearly and rationally, the more we will be able to make permanent positive changes in the emotional brain. It is not enough to make changes in the cerebrum or the cognitive part of the brain. We must reach farther down into the brain so that our beliefs, belief systems, feelings, and emotions can be changed. We must tap into the emotional brain to allow the therapy we're doing to permanently change our brain circuitry and its chemistry. And since we no longer do lobotomies, thankfully, we have only one way of getting healthy, rational, therapeutic thoughts and feelings down into the emotional brain. And that is through calmness, repetition, and reinforcement. This is how we stop panic attacks and keep them from coming back. The more your brain hears, sees, perceives, and is exposed to this rational therapy, the stronger the therapy becomes. The more you gently accept and understand it, and the more it turns into a feeling or positive emotion, the closer you are to overcoming anxiety and learning to control and stop your panic attacks. Now let's discuss the effects of adrenaline a little further. We've talked about what's really going on in our body when we have a panic attack. Your brain thinks you are in danger, so your adrenal glands react to this perceived danger by releasing excessive amounts of adrenaline and cortisol throughout your bloodstream. You feel this excess adrenaline as anxiety, and the mix of adrenaline and cortisol as panic. And this makes you agitated, hypervigilant, and resistant. Any way we can slow down the release of adrenaline and cortisol means we will be slowing down our anxiety and panic. Slowing it down means less adrenaline and cortisol is distributed throughout our body, and we are less likely to experience a panic attack. This is not the main solution to panic attacks, but it helps remarkably. We will be learning several basic strategies to prevent our adrenal glands from releasing excessive amounts of adrenaline and cortisol. When you use these strategies, you will be in control of the situation. Anxiety will no longer be in control. You will have slowed anxiety down. You will have slowed the release of adrenaline and cortisol down, so that anxiety gradually lessens and goes away. To learn anything new, such as what to do to stop and get over a panic attack, you must practice the steps over and over again. If you want to learn how to play a musical instrument, such as the piano or the guitar, you start with learning simple chords. And if you keep practicing, you get better at it every day. You learn what notes make up each chord and which chords sound pleasant together. Eventually, you get to the point where you can play automatically. You don't have to fumble around for the right notes anymore. You know what to play without thinking about it. It is automatic. We want to reach the point where we know the rational therapy so well and so automatically that panic and anxiety have no chance at ever bothering us again. So I will be reminding you to reinforce and repeat the relevant cognitive strategies as we go through the series, step by step and in sequential order. You will be happily surprised at some of your conclusions, and your brain will perk up and take notice, making the path to full success even easier. You will be learning new rational habits that change your thinking and belief systems, and new actions you can take to reduce the amount of anxiety you feel. If you look at getting better only from a day-to-day progression, you won't notice much forward movement. But if you look at your progress every month, you'll be very surprised. And also encouraged that in another month, you will have made such incredible progress against anxiety that the main horrors of an attack may no longer cause you any problems. Most people will find this to be very surprising in a very positive way. Then you'll reinforce each anti-anxiety strategy by doing it over and over again until all your anxiety is gone. All of this will happen over time because the brain takes time to learn new habits and for them to become automatic and permanent. Again, this is similar to learning how to play a new song on the piano, guitar, or any other musical instrument. This is what you are going to do with the calming and peaceful cognitive strategies, keeping in mind that you must be motivated and patient as you go through the therapy strategies. What helps us overcome panic is this rational, proactive, structured therapy that we reinforce and reinforce until anxiety and fear are totally and completely gone. The brain is capable of learning and overriding anything that it's already learned. And we will take advantage of the brain's power as we learn to become more rational and positive with ourselves. You have completed session 1, the introductory session of the series Overcoming Panic and Anxiety. Here's what's coming up in future sessions. In sessions 2 through 4, we will hit at the very heart of how to solve panic and why it works. And you'll see why virtually no one figures out how to get over panic on their own. This discovery was made by an average everyday person who was plagued by panic attacks and who developed agoraphobia and was confined to her home as a result. Panic and agoraphobia destroyed her life, held her housebound, and robbed her of her family and friends. She was so desperate and life was so miserable for her that she made preparations for her impending death. But something quite unexpected happened, and she didn't die. I'll tell you this entire story in the next session because it fully demonstrates the panic syndrome and, more importantly, tells us what we must do to get over our panic attacks. We will thoroughly explore what to do and why to overcome panic attacks and anxiety for good and give you the time to practice these steps, which will lessen and stop your own panic attacks. Then we'll add an important element that's necessary to put you in control of your panic and anxiety. This is something you already do every day of your life, and we'll just change a few minor things so that you can be using this anti-anxiety strategy every day. We'll spend a little more time discussing and reviewing what to do if anxiety or panic comes your way. And then we'll move on to the calming peace zone handouts, which is a novel way of relaxation that you can use almost any time, day or night. There is much more therapy beyond that point, including symptom shifting, rational thinking, self-esteem, and overlearning so that we can prevent panic from recycling back into our lives ever again. You can stop your panic attacks, and that's where we'll start in session 2. Give yourself some rational credit for being motivated to overcome panic disorder. And give yourself a pat on the back for realizing that you can and will learn the strategies you are about to start in the next session. Refer to the handout called What to Do This Week in the Session 1 materials for instructions on what to do during this first week, and to see the handouts and supplemental materials in this session. This is the end of Session 1.